Hi there, I'm Mike McGuire, host of Sunday Night's Main Event. This is our weekly flagship show. Normally, this version of the show is released as a Patreon exclusive. The reason why I wanted to share this episode with you today, extended and uncut, was because we talk a lot about Scott Hall in this show. Dave Meltzer and I go through his career. At the end of the episode, Matt Ederer and Boris Aguilar share some of their favorite memories of Scott. And I've got a story of my own, encountering Razor Ramon at a young age and being absolutely gobsmacked. And coincidentally, our guest this week, Matt Cardona. We don't talk about Scott at all simply because this interview was recorded before we knew what was going on. But Matt posted a photo today on his Instagram of him as a young man with Razor Ramon at a meet and greet. And it all just seemed kind of perfect. So in celebration of Scott Hall, we're going to talk about his life. And on behalf of everybody here at Sunday Night's Main Event, all his fans, myself included, nothing but the absolute best to Scott Hall, his friends, and his family. Tonight, Stone Cold Steve Austin says he's coming back at WrestleMania, but will it be a match or a recipe for disappointment? A major injury has hit a former WWE champion. Jeff Hardy is finally All Elite, but will AEW end up in court because of it? And the NWA is a week away from holding a massive pay-per-view. So to get us ready, the new belt collector is here. NWA World's Heavyweight Champion Matt Cardona is coming up on Sunday night's Main Event.
We love professional wrestling.
Acknowledge me.
This is Sunday night's Main Event.
The cream of the crop. Nobody does it better.
On the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Because you love something fresh and new, don't you?
We deserve better, people.
The best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be.
Do I have everybody's attention now?
My God, what an impact.
Welcome to Canada's wrestling radio show, Sunday night's Main Event, powered by Great Lakes Beer, a fiercely independent brewery. Order online at greatlakesbeer.com. I'm Mike McGuire, and it is a very news-heavy day today as we recap the week in wrestling. We have special guest Matt Cardona, the NWA World's Heavyweight Champion, plus the big news breaking earlier this afternoon, one of the most famous, one of the most celebrated, Scott Hall, a.k.a. the bad guy, Razor Ramon, one of the founders of the NWO, now battling for his life in hospital. We will give you the latest update with Dave Meltzer and more coming up. A reminder, we love if you're a part of the show, you can always find us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at SNME Radio. And also, you can join us for extra content, patreon.com/SNME Radio, extended versions of this show. You'll also get exclusive access to full interviews, like the one with Matt Cardona coming up, and a bunch more. Again, patreon.com/SNME Radio. There's lots to talk about, so let's get to it. Here is this week's Five Count.
You want
to
hear the breaking news?
The bad guy is battling for his life. Razor Ramon, Scott Hall, is currently in ICU, reportedly on life support after suffering 3 heart attacks due to hip surgery complications. There's reports of blood clots involved. We don't know for sure. All we know is that we are hoping for the absolute best for Scott Hall and our sincerest wishes for his entire family. It has been confirmed that Steve Austin will be returning to the ring in some fashion this year at WrestleMania.
Whether you want to call this a KO show, a match, a fight, a brawl, whatever, I will guarantee you this. In Dallas, Texas, where I started my career at WrestleMania, Stone Cold Steve Austin is going to open up one last can of whoop-ass on you, Kevin Owens.
Austin is advertised to be part of night one of the two-night WrestleMania this year. Speculation is that Austin is going to show up ready to wrestle, as he did mention the 19 years since he had his last match. All that's known is that it will be a physical appearance against Kevin Owens, which character-wise, I'm sure he's terrified. As for the dude, I'm sure he's thrilled beyond belief. You've likely heard now that former WWE champion Big E had his neck broken on SmackDown Friday night during a tag match between Big E and Kofi against Sheamus and Ridge Holland with new protege Pete Dunne, now known as Butch. Midway through the match, Big E was spiked on his head and immediately rushed by ambulance to hospital, where he had this to say.
I got some really good news, all things considered. The C1 and C6 are indeed fractured. Not displacement, though, which is a very good thing. And I don't have any damage to my spinal cord, no ligament damage, and no surgery, which I'm very thankful for. And a pro tip, if you're going to break your neck, do it in Birmingham. They've been great. Everyone here at UAB has been great.
Birmingham, Alabama is the location of the surgeons that have famously saved the careers of countless wrestlers throughout the year. Well, it's a surprise that everybody saw coming. Jeff Hardy is All Elite. The ever-growing AEW roster has reunited Matt and Jeff Hardy. Now, there was talk that because Jeff was caught on video telling a fan he was heading to AEW before his WWE contract was up, that they could be filing a lawsuit. But that doesn't seem to be the case or the course of action they're taking. If you recall, Jeff Hardy was released from WWE a few months back and forced to take a drug test, which he did not fail. And for those that are wondering, where is Miro? It's been 165 days since he lost the TNT Championship in AEW. While he did appear in a few matches and video promos for a few weeks after, it's been unclear as to what's been happening with the Bulgarian Brute ever since. Wrestling Observer reported a few days ago that Miro has reportedly signed a 4-year extension to his AEW contract. That is some of the news in wrestling this week, but again, we're following the top story, and that is the condition of the bad guy. Scott Hall, Razor Ramon, plus a sit-down with NWA World's Heavyweight Champion, the former Zack Ryder, Matt Cardona, is coming up for you here tonight on Sunday Night's Main Event.
This is Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio.
It's time!
It's time for the Wrestling Observer Insider. With Dave Meltzer on Sunday Night's Main Event.
Top of mind, Dave. Of course, we have to talk about Scott Hall today. And, of course, the story broke earlier today about health complications. At the time we're recording, we're not sure how Scott is doing, but we have to talk about this guy, because talk about a guy who had such a big impact on the business, but never really was a world champion of big ilk, you know, and never really made it to the top of the pecking order. But when you think of names that influence the business, Scott Hall has to be on that list, right?
I mean, he was a huge star because of his size and his look from pretty much, not, I wouldn't say day one, although the first time I saw him would have been with him and Danny Spivey as a tag team, I think American Starship, for a little while. And then he got a big push with Vern Gagne in the AWA. They wanted to make him the next Hulk Hogan. But the AWA was going down, so it was not necessarily a plum position when he got there. It was meant to be. You know, he teamed with Kurt Hennig, and Kurt was a great, great wrestler. And the idea was that, you know, Kurt would help him through and Scott would be the big star of the company. But by the time that came, the company was not doing well. And then Scott kind of floundered. He got it for a while. He worked in Japan. He worked for WCW the first time as Diamond Stud. You know, did well, had potential. And then, of course, as Razor Ramon became a big, big star in WWF. And then an even bigger star as Scott Hall when he and Kevin Nash and Hulk Hogan with the NWO. And that was a giant, giant thing. And then always battling, you know, issues before he ever got into wrestling. There was a situation where he was in a bar fight and the guy he was fighting ended up dying from a gunshot wound. I think it was ruled self-defense, but he was haunted by that, and major drinking problems, obviously, and substance abuse problems that always plagued him everywhere he went for years and years and years. I mean, not so much in the early years, but certainly from through WCW, you know, that period, and then later in WWF, and then later in TNA when he would go there and things like that. So he had a really rough life. The guys who I know always regarded him as very smart when it came to little ways to get over, you know, like learning how to play to the camera, you know, not so much the wrestling aspect, but the, you know, they thought he was pretty much of a master at, you know, making the TV camera work for you and getting over. And they thought he's very, very smart when it came to angles and things like that. A lot of people went to Tim for advice. You know, he obviously had his enemies as well, because he was pushed and things happened over and over and over again. You know, he got chance after chance after chance, and always would, until, you know, basically his body couldn't handle it anymore when he got older and started having the physical problems. And I guess he fell and broke his hip, was having surgery, and that's when he had the three heart attacks. So it's, you know, and in, you know, yeah. So that's what happened. You know, what 60, I would say Scott would be 63 years old.
We're talking about Scott Hall, AKA Razor Ramon. When it comes to Scott Hall's contributions, the one thing that I always think of is when he and Kevin Nash went to WCW and they reportedly told everybody what they were making. And that was actually part of what ushered in guaranteed contracts for wrestlers, because a long time.
Well, WCW always had guaranteed contracts.
Okay.
They always did. So they didn't do that. Now, I mean, did that play a part in WWF offering people guaranteed contracts? Probably, you know, it's like it's but they had to. It was going to happen whether it was Scott Hall and Nash went or not, because Vince was having to compete and to get, you know, Mark Merrow and Brian Pillman, which I think were the first two guys that he got from WCW through offering. He had to offer guaranteed contracts because WCW was. And he really wanted, it's funny how he really wanted Mark Merrow. He thought Mark Merrow was going to be this big, big star. And then Mark Merrow really didn't become a big star in WWF. And then Brian Pillman, obviously at the time, was like a big coup, but Brian was hurt so badly that, you know, and ended up dying. At that point, yeah, Vince started with guaranteed contracts very shortly after Hall and Nash came over, you know, and Hall was first, right? And then Nash mm-hmm. came a couple of weeks later. I mean, I remember it was actually Vince who called me up on both of them. And I remember, you know, like, especially the Nash one, and it was, you know, his side of it was that they were being offered so much money and that, you know, he couldn't keep pace with that. And then, you know, Brett was the next one, although they ended up, you know, Vince did sign Brett, although Brett went a year later, you know, the end of 97. So it was a raw, you know, it was that period, that Monday Night Wars period. And he was, without a doubt, Hall and Nash were gigantic part of WCW going ahead. Like when they went there, the ratings were kind of even, you know, it wasn't like WWF was dominating the ratings, although WWF was the stronger company, but the ratings were even. And then Nitro went to 2 hours, which was a big boost. And then Scott came, I believe that very week it went to 2 hours. And from that period, you know, Nitro was, you know, one until 90 from this would be like 96 through 98 when, you know, Vince and Austin had their angle and turned things around.
It's the famous 83 weeks of WCW being on number one, right?
Right. Yes. The Hall and Nash, you know, and then the NWO, you know, with Hogan and everything like that, that summer. Yeah. WCW skyrocketed in popularity. You know, in 96 and certainly 97 and 98 were huge. And then, you know, the collapse in 99. So they had 2.5 really good years.
And really, like you said, Scott Hall was the face, the first face of what would become the Monday Night War. Right. Like,
I mean, certainly up there. I mean, I think that if you said the first, I would say Lex Luger, actually. In 95.
Yeah. When he left after SummerSlam. Right.
Yeah. I say Lex Luger, but Hall and Nash were Luger was important in the in Nitro becoming, you know, this, you know, big time thing, because you don't know what's going to happen. And he was on the first show. So I think that established Nitro as like a really cool product. But, you know, the Hall and Nash and Hogan era was definitely the era where it really took off and spawned, you know, the most popular version of Sting. And it spawned, you know, the Bill Goldberg and everything like that, the different DDP. You know, so many guys, you know, that they would allow, the guys that they would sell for, those were the guys who really got over. Of course, they didn't sell for a lot of guys, and those guys didn't get over. So they were in a lot, they had a lot of control over what was going on. And, you know, it was, like I said, it was a great period for a short period of time. You know, and Scott had a lot of problems during that period. You know, if you say Scott had no problems, he would have been world champion. I mean, he would have, because he was charismatic enough and a good enough worker, you know, I mean, without a doubt. But, you know, when he got to that point where he could be world champion, he couldn't be trusted to be world champion. So it never happened. Yeah.
Still that iconic image of Scott walking down the stands, right? And the two guys are just having a regular kind of...
Yeah, Mike Enos and whoever it was. Yeah, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And he grabs the microphone, just walks in the ring in the middle of the match. Says, you all know who I am, but you don't know why I'm here. And that was, even with Luger showing up the day after SummerSlam in WCW on Nitro, it was even then still done kind of tongue-in-cheek. Like, they really worked this invasion angle as long as they could, until there was basically a cease and desist on it, right?
Yeah. They wanted, I mean, the way they wanted the angle to be kind of like what AAA does, you know, where the idea that it's like the other company. I mean, they wanted it to be WWF guys getting back at WCW for all the stuff Eric Bischoff said. I mean, and they worked on that for a couple of weeks until, yeah, Jerry McDivitt got involved, and they had to basically go on TV and say we were not affiliated whatsoever with WWF. But I mean, that didn't slow the angle down at all.
No.
Maybe, you know, the angle was strong. Yeah, with just that whole end. Then they called it the NWO after that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was funny because for a couple of weeks, they wouldn't give him a name because they wanted people to think it was Razor Ramon until, you know, finally they became Kevin Nash and Scott Hall, their real names.
Yeah, and that's how the Outsiders moniker came before the NWO, and they just stuck with that as the tag name.
Right.
And then, you know, life after WCW, we know that Scott worked very hard with DDP to get clean. The documentary that was shot on him that told his whole life story, basically. And we've known that Scott hadn't been well for a while, but shifting.
Yeah, he had health problems for years and years because of, you know, the abuse that he put on his system. Yeah. So it was, but still, you know, it's kind of just the whole thing is kind of a shock, you know, to me.
But for one of those guys who, again, didn't make it to world champion level, I think it's safe to say, like, pop culture impact. You say Razor Ramon to this day, people know who you're talking
about. Well, I think Scott Hall is actually more famous than Razor Ramon, but both names are very, very famous.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to say. The NWO is right up there, too. It depends on which era of fan, I think.
I mean, the NWO to me is crowning thing. The Razor Ramon thing is what got him over. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a journeyman wrestler, although, Vern wanted to give him a big push. But after Vern, he didn't really do a lot. And then he left WCW as Diamond Stud, and he was just a guy on the show. And Vince went with the whole Razor Ramon thing. And the first thing he did was feud him with Randy Savage, who was one of the biggest stars, and he would beat Randy Savage everywhere. So he immediately got that credibility. And then, you know, I remember seeing him work with Bret in Sacramento at the Royal Rumble and, you know, Bret Hart. And then, you know, he was a top guy there. He was one of their elite guys. And, you know, very charismatic guy and everything like that. And then when he made the move, you know, when him and Nash made the move for, you know, a big, big raise and a lesser schedule of dates, you know, a combination of those two things. It was WCW was on fire. I mean, it was the strongest that they ever were. It was great. You know, he was, if we go and say that was like the biggest period of our lifetimes in pro wrestling, most popular, you know, he was absolutely a key character in that period and that period being so hot. Yeah.
We're talking to Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer. It's got all the inside information. If you haven't heard the story at the time that we're producing this show, Scott Hall reportedly critical condition on life support after suffering three heart attacks following complications from surgery. Of course, our thoughts are with him and his family and hoping for the best outcome at this time. However, we do have some other things we need to talk about as well, Dave. You know, it seems so weird to go back into, you know, wrestling news and storylines after talking about Scott Hall here. But another name that did make big impact this week, of course, was Steve Austin accepting the WrestleMania challenge. Do we know if it's going to be a match or not? Because he said the whole thing about, you know, something in 19 years has been awakened in me. And we've seen physicality before, but is it going to be an actual match?
It's not billed as a match, and Steve will do as much as like with, you know, Steve's going to do what he feels he can do that week, and he'll tell them. I suppose they could segue it into a match if Steve wants to do it. I think the biggest draw would be a match. So that tells me, because if you remember, originally the idea was a match. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we were basically told that like Steve's, you know, a little squeamish about a match, but we're going to have a fight, and it's not going to be just a stunner. It's going to be a fight. And it's just a question of what he feels. He doesn't want to do a bad match, from what I understand. If it's a match, he wants to do a good match. If it's a brawl, he wants to do a good brawl. And I think, you know, from what I gather, he's basically said that, you know, he's very confident he can do a real good brawl right now. So that's what that's the plan right now.
He was wearing the hunting jacket in the video, but you know, even just looking at his neck and stuff and just knowing Steve Austin's build from the past, like it looked to me like he's put on a little bit of good mass. You know what I mean? So,
well, I'm sure he's going to look presentable.
I wouldn't be shocked if he actually came out there and gave us more than we expect, because.
Well, he's going to give you something. I mean, without a doubt. I mean, cause he will not go out there and do anything that he feels will be disappointing, you know, because he's had a lot of pride in his work. So he's going to do whatever he feels he can do, you know, whatever that is, if it's a full match, if it's a 7-minute brawl or a 5-minute brawl, whatever it is, he's going to, you know, that that will be what it is. You know, I mean, it's going to, you know, I mean, but he's going to want to be one of the stars of the show. He's not going to want to be like, oh, Steve Austin came back and it was a disappointment. Right. He don't want that. And I don't know that anyone wants that.
Is Cody Rhodes going to be on Raw tomorrow night?
I do not know if he's going to be on Raw tomorrow night. But what I do know is that as of Friday, Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins was still listed on the WrestleMania card. So that tells me that whatever it is with WWE is certainly not a dead deal. Far from it. It's a I would say that him still being on the listed on the show tells me it's a probable. Will he show up on Monday? That's probably a very, very closely guarded secret, because the people who would know and know what the WrestleMania card is do not know if he's going to be there on Monday. So I think that's going to be one of those things where either at the beginning of the show or the end of the show, you know, I mean, he's either going to be there or he's not. But unless something happens where Seth Rollins ends up in an angle with Matt Riddle or you know, what could be, I guess, in the tag title or who knows what, if Seth gets a new angle, that will tell you that the Cody thing fell through most likely. But if, you know, if nothing happens with Seth, I would say that we're still looking at Cody, even if Cody doesn't appear on the show tomorrow night.
Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer. Last thing quickly, Dave, it seems kind of weird again after the news we started with and to end with this, but we found out Vader is going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame now. Rumors are that Sid is next. Do you have any other names floating around that might be?
I've heard like Rick Steiner or the Steiner brothers, depending on Scott. Like, I think if Scott is not willing, they'll go with Rick, but they want the Steiner brothers. So that's a name that's floating around. Sid's the other name that's floating around. Yeah.
All right. There you have it. Dave Meltzer, of course, with the latest updates, everything going on in pro wrestling, wrestlingobserver.com. Dave, thanks for the time today, and we'll catch up with you again next week.
Have a great week. Sir.
Coming up, we shift gears completely. The NWA World's Heavyweight Champion, Matt Cardona, in a conversation right here on Sunday Night's Main Event.
Chat wrestling all week long by joining the Sunday Night's Main Event group on Facebook. You're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio. Thanks for finding Sunday Night's Main Event. To get the complete show as well as bonus weekly podcasts, please join our Patreon at patreon.com/SNMEradio.
Coming up in just a moment, we're going to talk to Matt Cardona. Formerly known as Zack Ryder in WWE, he was part of a score of releases during the pandemic, but where other wrestlers ended their career on that note, Matt Cardona cranked up the hustle. He'd already been doing a side hustle as the host of the Major Wrestling Figure podcast, along with Brian Myers, his tag team partner, Kurt Hawkins. And since leaving WWE, he's been expanding his brand and his profile by taking on matches and all comers from everywhere. This is the Patreon exclusive unedited conversation with Always Ready, Matt Cardona. Always ready! Let's see if I can get them all right now. The $1,000 bros, the Michael Jordan of action figure collecting. you're seeming already kind of bored with this, so maybe I'll just say the NWA World's Heavyweight Champion, Matt Cardona, is joining us here on Sunday Night's Main Event. Hello, sir.
I'll do them all for you. It's the Michael Jordan of WrestleMania collecting, the $1,000 broski, the internet champion, the deathmatch king, the major player, man, AIW absolute and intense champions, NYWC champion, Impact Wrestling digital media world champion, NWA World's Heavyweight Champion. There's so many to list.
Can I ask you right now, when you're going around everywhere, how much extra are you paying just to check the extra bags? Because I'm thinking with all
I would
belts.
Never, ever check the championships. I do carry, like, for instance, this past weekend, I had an autograph signing the big event in New York, and I had RCW in San Antonio. I'll bring the NWA title, the Impact title, the internet title, and that will be in my carry-on with my gear. I can't bring all the other titles. When I did AIW a couple weeks ago, in Cleveland, I had their titles, and I knew the next day I was going to NWA. I made the promoter mail me the title. I can't carry them all. this is too much. It's just too much. You're going to have to mail them back to me. I cannot bring them home. I can't. I mean, send them to me. I'll keep them at home, but I can't bring them home this time. There's just no room in my bags, and I can't check them. That's not the professional thing to do.
Well, and without peeling back too much of the clearly how trustworthy Matt Cardona is, there aren't a lot of indie promoters that would let their belts go
back in the day. So the fact that people actually mail them to you, that's pretty, that's a big check mark of trust for you, sir, because, you know, there are some indie promoters back in the day, from my experiences, that would be like, no, you can just leave it here and use it at the next show. So
that's what I would do if I was an indie promoter. But also, I'm a different situation. They want me to carry it around. They want me to post about it. So it's smart. I'm the new belt collector.
This has been amazing, man. As a fan, I was saying before we started here, I mean, the first time I saw you was in WWE CW days, and you were just
I'm an ECW original. I don't know why people add the WW before. It's ECW.
Correct. When you were an ECW original, and touring around and just getting known, to see the evolution of the broski from everything that came from the YouTube series. And I watched every episode religiously, man, from the Why So Much Tape Bro up until the resurgence of smashing the US title. Like, man, I'm telling you, I followed your stuff, and I still do to that. This day. So much, in fact, I don't have the new Cardona figure yet, but I'm getting there, but I do have
right now. What are you waiting for? They're so...
Well, I'm still repping here, so you're still...
Okay.
I still update the titles. I still do. This is the...
Is that an old...
Great American Bash Jeff Elite. Jarrett? Yeah. What's that?
Which NWA title is that? Is that from an NWA, like a Jeff Jarrett TNA? What is that from?
That was, yeah, exactly. Yeah, from that TNA series that came out. Yeah. So, and they had the X title and the the trophy and everything. Yeah, but that's that one. I was going to ask you, when we get down the road here to talking about the figures and your involvement in actually helping produce these now, when are we going to get some more of this belt for Cardona figures? Because frankly, we're going to need it for a long time, I think. But
man, that's a great question. It's it's interesting that the NWA doesn't have any action figure representation.
Am I witnessing the genesis of an idea right now?
You might be.
All right.
Let me see what I can do.
All right. I ask for nothing except, you know, maybe you mail me a case when you're done.
A case? Jesus Christ.
Well, look at my room, man. I mean, how many cases, how many boxes do you have show up a week, roughly?
A lot. You know what I see? Listen, it's not very often that I do one of these where someone has stuff on display and they have something that I'm looking for. And I see something right now. I can see it right now.
What are you looking
for? Those Canadian Walmart buddies back there. I see that Bret Hart.
That one right there?
Yeah. I've been looking for the whole set. Obviously, right now, they're just in Canada. I don't live in Canada. I live in Orlando.
What if I told you I have an extra one?
I appreciate it, but I'm psycho. I need to get them all at once. But thank you, though.
All at once? Okay. Well, that's fair.
Because they're all great.
Yeah, they are. They are.
So Chelsea, my wife's family lives in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
I sent them the picture. I said, you got to go to Walmart and get these things. I don't think they took me seriously, because that was like a month ago. I still don't have them.
Is it weird that grown-ass men also have figures of your wife? Like, that's super normal, right?
I think it's weird that you had it on your lap.
it's over here, and that's where it's staying. So
okay, it was on the wall. That's where the fact you just pulled it from your lap. It's a little hot to me. I don't blame you, but it's a little odd.
Actually, fun story. She might remember this if you tell her. I was at her, I think, third or fourth show. I was actually ring announcing. She did a show in Regina, Saskatchewan. This is when she just came out of BC, and she was just going literally across. It was just before she got the role on TV as the Daniel Bryan thing. And so, but I met her then, and then I'm actually in the movie Chokeslam, where she was.
Oh,
the,
I know
the
that movie. I have it on DVD.
Yeah, have you watched it since?
No, I've not watched it. I haven't.
I'm gonna highly recommend that you just let the mystique of it live in the DVD case. And
that's the plan.
Yeah, I have a signed copy of The Chaperone, and Triple H signed the outside wrapper.
Yeah.
So like, the only way to watch the movie is to actually unwrap it where the autograph is. So I think that's his way of saying, like, you know what? Don't even bother watching it. Just have
I think
it.
So. So. I agree.
Okay, man. So, I mean, we could delve into career and everything. I don't think there's a wrestling fan alive right now that pays attention to the indies, especially, that doesn't know what Matt Cardona is doing these days. But since we're on TSN Radio across Canada, a lot of people did know you as Zack Ryder. That's where the big rise to fame came from. And now, since your release, you're one of these guys we hear about who had a plan on go, and it was a complete transformation. How did you face the idea that people are going to go, okay, Zack Ryder's going to try and take himself seriously now, and now becoming this? Like, was that ever a concern to you of like, man, I hope this works?
Well, even the last couple of years in WWE, more than a couple, like 5 or so years, I dropped all the headband, sunglass bullshit, you know? to try to be taken more seriously. It just, I was never presented in that light, with the exception of, you know, a couple times where I had ultimate opportunities at WrestleMania, for example, winning the Intercontinental title. I thought that was going to be the start of like, okay, here we go, you know, because you only need one guy back there to have some faith in you. And I thought I did, which was great. Turned into the situation with the Hype Bros. That didn't work out. Long story short, I have nothing bad to say about my time in WWE. I love my time there. Had some great moments. Extremely proud of the YouTube stuff, like you mentioned before. You know, really proving that you can change your position in the company if you work your ass off. And that's what I did. And I'm very, very proud of that. But as for getting released, I knew, okay, well, here we go, because I need to hustle. I need to get things moving. But we were just, the pandemic was just starting. There were no independents to go do. I mean, listen, there were a couple that were running, but I didn't want to, you know, make this splash in front of like 15 fans spread out wearing masks. I knew I had to wait. I had the cup of coffee in AW, but even with AW, there were no fans there, you know. Impact was great. I started off at Impact in 2021, but again, no fan. It's just not the same wrestling. If you're a wrestler, even as a fan, you know, like, it's hard to watch it on TV with no fans. The fans, they dictate the product. You know, they dictate who gets over, who's popular, and they dictate the matches, right? Like, you can have a great match technically bell to bell, but if the fans don't care, I don't think that's a good match. You know, you watch like Warrior Hogan WrestleMania 6. Technically, is it a great match? No, but with the crowd reaction, it's like one of the best matches of all time, in my opinion. So I was just waiting for my moment. And then luckily it all kind of snowballed in the fact that, you know, I'm kind of, I don't want to say like I have my finger on the pulse, but I'm definitely listening to what's going on. I'm watching what else is going on. And I saw all these tweets about Nick Gage and me versus Nick Gage in this death match. And, you know, at first, even I thought, no fucking way, this is stupid. There's no way I'm going to do this. The more I thought about it, I said, well, why not? You know, it's so unexpected. No bad can come from this. It's going to get some buzz. Let's do it. Sometimes in wrestling, you actually have to give the fans what they want. So I did. I did not realize the buzz it would create. Like, it changed my career. It changed everything. It wasn't my plan. Like, once I got released, okay, I'm going to start, you know, this feud with this death match guy. That certainly wasn't the plan. It just fell into my lap. I think I'm very good at adapting with what comes and rolling with the punches, so to speak. And ever since then, man, like, everything has taken off. And, you know, even when I was in WWE, I see all the tweets like, why don't you just turn heel? Well, listen, guys, A, I don't write the show. And B, like, there's the answer. You know?
Yeah.
And even and then, you know, when I got released from WWE, I have to still maintain some sort of me that people identify, because I'm already changing my name. Right. So unless like this diehard fan who like, you know, I have to look the same, you know, do the same stuff. And I couldn't just be this new deathmatch. It wouldn't have made sense. It had to happen organically. And it did, whether it be a deathmatch guy or something else. And that's what fell into place. And ever since then, it's been a wild, wild ride. I am busier than ever, but I'm loving it. I'm having the best time of my career.
When you bring up Nick Gage and the death match and GCW as a whole, this was, I think, the turning point, at least from what I saw. And I'm sure you're feeling it as it goes, where you're going from that WWE guy, the guy that you'd never picture in a million years doing stuff that would be a death match, because past fans' experience with a lot of former WWE stars and a lot of bigger names is that they come in, they do the greatest hits and they leave and everybody's happy, you know, get an autograph, get a meet and greet photo and you're right. Good to go. When did you become comfortable, I guess, or did you become comfortable with the idea of embracing this death match practice? And did you feel okay going into the match? Was it a whole new learning experience for you from that point on? Was this like, I guess, for lack of a better term, like a baptism by fire getting into it? Or were you mentally prepared to get into that world when it happened?
I knew it was going to be violent. I knew there was going to be some blood. That's why I wore all white. I did not imagine that it'd be covered in blood, that my white shirt would turn completely red. I thought, oh, it'll be cool to have a couple of trickles of blood on this white shirt. I could not have imagined the violence. I could not have imagined the buzz also. And I beat Nick Gage, and I am the deathmatch king. I retired. I'm done. I'm one and done. I don't have to keep doing these death matches. And the WWE style that you speak of, right? Now, I still do it, and I'm hated for it, which I love. I don't necessarily need to be liked and adored. As long as I come through that curtain and there's some sort of response, whether the people are going crazy or booing me and flipping me off, giving me the middle finger, I'm fine with that. It's when you go through the curtain and there's nothing, that's when you have a problem. And luckily, I don't have that problem. You know, for a period of time, it was fun because I'd walk through a curtain on these indie shows. I'd be like, okay, am I going to be a babyface or heel tonight? Because it was so mixed. Now I would say 99.9% I'm a heel because they hate me, which I love. I love. I don't want to be liked. I love my fans, the ones who have stuck with me, whether it be from WWE or new fans. Glad to have you. But I'm not trying to convert anybody. I'm not trying to prove people wrong. I'm not trying to, you know, I don't have this chip on my shoulder trying to prove anything. The only thing I'm trying to prove is to myself and to my supporters. I don't need to prove doubters wrong at all. I don't give a shit. Quite frankly, I don't care. I don't care if you don't like me. I'm about buzz, money, and gold. And I've been making a lot of all three.
When it comes to Matt Cardona, the person growing up as a wrestling fan, I think that a lot of us that are fans of what you're doing and have been fans since the dawn of the Internet Championship and knowing your story, you know, going back to the majors and just following you grow and evolve and everything. If you could talk to wrestling fan Matt Cardona right now and ask him what he thinks, what this world of wrestling could be like, did you ever foresee, I mean, obviously everybody who wants to be a wrestler wants to be a champion, wants to be the guy on top of the world. But is this at all like you thought it would be if it were to happen?
Well, to kind of go back to what you said earlier, like, when I was breaking into the business, independent wrestling for a WWE guy, for an ex-WWE guy, was like you just said, you go do the greatest hits, you change the spell of your name, you know? And like, I hated that. Even back then, like, I'm like, oh, this sucks. Like, I never wanted to be like that. But now it is so different. Independent wrestling isn't like this. I don't think it's like this negative term. You know, there's so much great wrestling going on all over the place. And now with like streaming stuff and the internet, like you can, you know, I'll do a show in Las Vegas and everybody in the East Coast is tweeting about it. You know what I'm saying? Something like GCW selling out the Hammerstein Ballroom. Is that independent wrestling? I guess. Right. But it's just crazy what independent wrestling has become. I mean, fuck, AEW was all like the hottest independent wrestlers coming together, doing All In, and it spreads to AEW. So is that independent wrestling? There's absolutely no way that's independent wrestling. So I think now, like, just wrestling is wrestling. There's so much wrestling going on. WWE, AEW, Impact, GCW, and these quote unquote independents. Mm-hmm. People are making a living. I think it's the best time to be a wrestler. I also think it's the best time to be a fan because you can consume wrestling every day, like brand new content every day. And then you can seek out other content, whether it be on streaming services, the internet. The days of good old tape trading are over. Like, you can just type something into the computer and you'll see it instantly. It's awesome.
Were you personally getting enjoyment out of the angle or the style you were taking to the GCW fans by bringing in the Universal Championship with the spinner and this sort of thing? Like, obviously you had a vision for how you're going to approach this portion of fans.
Right.
But I mean, how much fun is it, I guess, in your mind and the creative process and being like, I'm going to win the title. I'm going to get this Universal belt. It's going to just get everybody so mad at me. It's going to be so much fun. Are you enjoying that process as you do it?
Yeah, I absolutely love it. Because I'll say it again. I love my time in WWE. I'm not like, oh my God, they released me during a pandemic. I'm not one of those guys. You know, I had a great run there. A lot of highs, a lot of lows, but a lot of great memories. And everything I learned to be successful right now is from WWE. You know, so I'm forever grateful for that. And I'm proud of my time there. And if that's going to make me hated, then so be it. And I'm going to use all those tools that I've learned to be the most hated wrestler in wrestling.
And what if we love you because you want to be hated? That's the, I guess, the question from a fan standpoint.
And like I said, if I convert some people, glad to have you. But I'm not trying to get you to be a fan. I'm not trying to get you to buy my shirt. I'm not trying to get you to cheer me. I just want to walk through that curtain and get some sort of emotion, good or bad.
You won the NWA title clearly wearing the gear that was in tribute to Christian Cage with his NWA championship. And I guess how many people like Christian or Edge, who you've also done tributes to in the past? I mean, you've done a lot of hidden gear tributes that you reveal afterwards sometimes to fans. Like, do you kind of have stuff on standby for a moment that might happen? Or because it just you're envisioned to have yourself ready for any situation, you know, pardon the phrase, but, you know, always ready.
Right. I don't have anything necessarily lined up that I don't want to bore you with this long story, but that Christian gear, I actually had similar gear made for WrestleMania 35 when Brian Myers and I won the tag team titles, because that was Christian's WrestleMania 20 gear. And then once we got released, so Mattel was supposed to make figures of us in that gear. Okay. And it never happened. It never happened because we got released. Well, a whole bunch of BS, but long story short, it didn't happen. So then we were approached by a company, Super 7, to get action figures made. Like, once we got released, like, instantly, I'm like, well, I don't have, like, I didn't expect to get fired like yesterday. I don't have like gear ready to go. So I'm like, oh, what if I get like that WrestleMania gear, but I'll switch the logo so it's like MC instead of ZR, and that could be the figure. Turns out I didn't go with that for the figure, but I got that gear made. So I've been sitting on that for almost 2 years now.
Oh, wow.
Waiting for the right time to wear it. And so, you know what? This match for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship would be a great time, because that's also the gear Christian won when he won that. And then that day, it just so happened that I was like scrolling through Instagram and it said like 16 years ago on this day, Christian Cage wins the NWA. So I'm like, what? Like, that happened 16. It was like, that's fate right there. I have goosebumps right now just talking about it, because I didn't plan it that closely, you know? And then for the gear I wore at Hammerstein Ballroom, this Mikey Whipwreck ECW gear, I got that made in like 2016. It was supposed to be my Royal Rumble gear. And I got pulled from the Royal Rumble that day. And like, different situations happened where I was supposed to wear it and didn't wear it. And I've been sitting on that for a while too. And then I'm like, whoa, we're going to be in the Hammerstein Ballroom. That's where Mikey Whipwreck took me to watch ECW One Night Stand, because he's my trainer, my original trainer. I said, this is the perfect time to wear it. So I'm actually glad I never got to wear it at some Royal Rumble where I probably would have gotten eliminated in 5 minutes. I'm glad I got to save it for a special night, but I don't have anything necessarily lined up. But you never know. Never say never.
Well, and that's totally fair too. Matt Cardona, the NWA World Champion, the entire resume, of course, is available right now. If you just follow his Instagram, which you should. I love the stuff you put up in character, out of character. Like, you just seem like a guy that gets the most out of life. And
yeah, I do.
Your Disney World status is one thing of legend, to say the least. Just how much you enjoy that. And I always see, whenever you do share those moments of your life outside the ring, you seem like a guy that really values the things outside of your career. And when I say that, I mean like friends, family, things like that. I mean, we all became super fans of your dad the first time we saw him. And, yeah. You know, just and like, I don't know. I almost see your dad in that position as us, as being the wrestling fan living vicariously through you. And so when all this is going on right now, I mean, what is your takeaway at the end of the day that isn't wrestling? And what are you feeling most gratified about in this part of your career and in this part of your life?
Yeah, I mean, it's such like a wild time, because I would say the majority of people who leave WWE, you never hear from them again. You know what I'm saying? They make their rounds on the indies if they do. And, you know, they do a year or two and then they fizzle out, fade out. But that's not going to be me. You know, I've been gone from WWE for 2 years and my stock continues to rise. I would argue that my stock is higher than it was the day I got released from WWE. How many guys can say that 2 years after they get released from WWE, their stock is higher? It's usually their stock is like way lower. They got to charge way less for their indie rates. Not me. And that's not because I'm so fucking talented, which I am. It's because I'm busting my ass. I'm working my ass off. You know, I'm doing stuff like this every single day. My schedule is loaded, but I love it. It doesn't feel like work. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just love this. Whether it be the Major Wrestling for a Podcast or designing gear or, you know, cutting promos and filming promos and or having these matches. I love everything about this business. I'm a fan who grew up. I've never worked a day in my life. 19 years in this business. I haven't had a real job for 19 years. So I don't take that for granted. I know it's very easily, like, it's easy for people, including myself. I've been there. We're like, oh shit, this flight's going to suck or I'm gone for the, but take a step back. And I realized that a few years ago, like I am absolutely living the dream right now. I'm not satisfied because I'm not complacent. I always want more, but I love what I've accomplished. I love what I have. And I don't take it for granted, but I still want more if that makes sense. I'm not bitter whatsoever. It's not like, oh, I wish I could have done this. I wish I could have done that. Like, it's not over. It's just getting started, baby. So like I said, if you're a fan, it's going to get a lot more interesting. And if you're not a fan, I don't give a shit.
I love it. Well, listen, man, this has been great. I you've given us a great amount of time here. Thank you for that. It's been an absolute pleasure just getting to sit down and chat with you today. And I would love to someday just talk figures with you beyond the scope of what you share on online and everything, 'cause I'm sure you've got some gems that you just, you know, you love to talk about. But one thing that I did want to ask you while you're here, because it seems as though this is another part of the Matt Cardona machine, and that is with the creation of these Bendham figures. I know you just presented Jeff Jarrett with his prototype, and you have all these old school Bendhams. I do have some of the Brett and Owen Bendhams up there with my wall of hearts here. But, you know, it's something where you're finding a niche. Not only are you taking your passion as a collector, but now you're making it available to other collectors as well. Is there going to be a further step? I mean, you're teaming up with production companies. You're teaming up with manufacturers. Is there going to be like a Cardona figure empire, you think? Like, you know, is it going to be instead of Mattel and a Starburst, it'll be Cardona, you know?
listen, with the Major Bendies available now, majorpodmerch.com, we just signed somebody else this week, and we're trying. Listen, nobody was, you know, salivating over for the Bendies to come back, you know, but we were, so we made them. And of course we took a gamble and we made ourselves for series one, because if the line fails, well, at least we made us. But so far it's been a success, and we got a lot more coming out. Like you said, Jeff Jarrett, we have Danhausen, we have Nick Gage, we have Adam Baum, who was supposed to come out back in the day, never did. So follow us on social media, the Major Wrestling for a Podcast, and, the Major Bendies are great, and we'll see what happens from there, you know. And then working with companies like Super 7 to make the complete, fully articulated figures. Then we got the old Remco style figures with Ringside Collectibles, the Pro Wrestling Tees, Micro Brawlers. We're everywhere, you know, because in WWE, I'm not going to say, you know, you're necessarily handcuffed, but outside the handcuffs are off if they were ever there. So we're able to do whatever we want, try whatever we want. And listen, not everything's going to be a success. Some things are gonna, you know, be 100% failures. We're gonna fall flat on our face, but that's how you learn. That's how you grow. And, you know, all I've ever wanted was an opportunity. And right now I'm just creating my own opportunity every single day. So I love it.
Well, your example of betting on yourself and coming out way ahead, man, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show today. Pleasure to meet you this way. Hope to do it down the road as well in person, shake your hand, and, you know, maybe sell you my extra breath to somebody here. But in all seriousness, Matt Cardona, thank you, sir. You've already mentioned basically where everybody can find you. If they don't know where, they should find you pretty easily, because the story of Matt Cardona continues to go on, and we look forward to telling it here, sir.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Always
ready! The new Bell Collector, Matt Cardona, and of course, he's going to be part of the NWA's Crockett Cup, which comes up this coming weekend, March 19th and 20th. He is defending his NWA World's Championship against former champion Nick Aldis. And yes, special guest referee Jeff Jarrett will be a factor in that match. Coming up, Boris and Matt from the BAM Podcast are joining me right here to talk more about Scott Hall. Plus, what do you want to see Stone Cold Steve Austin do at WrestleMania? That and a lot more right here on Sunday Night's Main Event.
Down,
This is Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio.
Joining me now from NXT Talk and the BAM podcast, which I listened to both this week, fellas. I got to say, great job on both shows. I'm not even that big on the nitty-gritty of sport contracts and deals, but you guys really do well when it comes to, of course, the return of Major League Baseball coming back. I know that you are both very excited for that, and you'll hear that more on the BAM podcast. But Boris Aguilar and Matt Ederer are here. Gentlemen, it's a weird day today because as we produce the show for this evening, we know that Scott Hall, Razor Ramon, his health has been in some pretty serious states today. So I thought rather than hanging on that news right now, we do what we can to remind everybody of Razor Ramon, Scott Hall, and share some memories here. Boris, I'm going to let you go ahead and go first. Do you have a particular moment in the career of Scott Hall or Razor Ramon that sticks out in your mind?
Yeah, so I didn't really know Scott Hall, Razor Ramon, before he was Razor Ramon in WWF, WWE.
Mm-hmm, right.
So for me, it was those intro commercials introducing us to the bad guy. Like, that's really what I loved, and I just instantly gravitated towards him, and I really liked this character. It was, I guess, the first bad guy heel that I actually really thought was cool.
The vignettes in the long stretch white convertible with the...
Yep.
What was it? I can't remember. Was it a leopard skin print or something? Like, he was basically pulling the Scarface, right? Yeah, yeah. Very colorful, very bright.
He was talking to us like, you know, how, you know, naming all the champions, and there was just like the voice, the everything about those commercials was so well done. It just made me just like think, oh man, I want to be this guy.
And I didn't even think he was that big of a guy, like physically, until you saw him in the ring against Randy Savage. And Randy, not a small guy either, but wow, like 6'7", you know, rocking about 270, 280 in the prime of his career. Like, he was a big, big dude. And I'm like you, Boris. I didn't know Scott Hall as Big Scott Hall in AWA until well after he'd become Razor Ramon, because we were in that age together. Matt, how about you? There's so many eras of Scott Hall to think back on, but what's something that stands out for you?
It's like Boris said, that cool factor that Scott Hall had. And what stands out to me right now more than anything is thinking about that first Nitro appearance, May of 1996, when Scott Hall shows up and literally changes the industry, his business acumen, and kind of just being in the right place at the right time. But Scott Hall and Kevin Nash changed the industry of wrestling, man. And that's what I think. He was so cool. And he and the rest of the NWO made wrestling cool again in the mid to late 90s.
Yeah, Meltzer and I were talking about it earlier. That moment where he comes down in the stands in the shirtless Canadian tuxedo, if you would.
Yeah.
The acid wash jean vest on and just hops the rail, hops in the ring. Meanwhile, two guys are trying to have a match and really started the Monday Night War off. You know, Meltzer argued that maybe Luger had started it when he showed up the day after SummerSlam, and that's fair. I mean, that was for the first Nitro, and that was a big deal, but I think things really heated up once Hall and Nash showed up for sure. I wanted to share a story with you guys really quick, talking about Scott Hall, as again, we're hoping for the best at the time we're producing this, but he's in pretty rough shape right now. I've talked about this show before, being at the WWF house show in Red Deer, Alberta at the Centrium. And this was 100 years ago now. Might as well have been 1994. I was in a pallbearer look, sound, and act like contest, which, by the way, I won. But
amazing.
Hey, I've been in a WWE ring once and I have a victory. So that's all I got to say. When you're waiting to go out there and do your thing in the contest, they literally stand you at gorilla. And me still believing totally in kayfabe, I mean, as a kid back then, you know, you see Owen Hart come out, who was his opponent, and Owen sees that there's us kids there. So, of course, he's like, he's trying to be bad guy Owen. He doesn't even look at us the whole time, right? And then out comes, I'll never forget it, in blue and gold gear, Razor Ramon, oozing machismo, oozing the gold, and he's got the Intercontinental title, man. And he's right there in front of me, large as life. That was the first time I'd seen the Intercontinental title that close up. That was the first time I'd seen a wrestler that close up. And it was Razor. He looks at me, and I'm the only one that's like fully dressed up like Paul Bearer at this point too. So he's like, hey, you're looking good, man. And he goes, can you hold this for a second? He hands me the IC belt. And I was like, oh my God. So, wow. You know, just a friendly guy. And that's the thing, like, for all the stuff he's caused. And I know he's been controversial and he's had some enemies backstage and everything, but if you look back at a lot of his moments dealing with people, and there were times where, you know, he took pins to get other guys over. He took pins when he wasn't supposed to take pins. I don't think he ever took himself in wrestling that seriously, unless it was the business acumen, unless it was the money side of it. I think that a lot of things he did out of enjoyment for himself. And I think that that part of the Scott Hall Razor Ramon legacy doesn't get told often. But if you really look back at it, the guy was pretty selfless in a lot of ways. So that's that. We speak of Scott Hall, though, and another guy we're talking about, Boris and Matt, is Scott Hall's WrestleMania 18 opponent, and that was one Stone Cold Steve Austin. 19 years, we now have Stone Cold Steve Austin coming back for what we believe is going to be maybe not a full referee three-count submission match, but it might be something pretty darn close. The question is, gentlemen, what do you want to see from Stone Cold Steve Austin at WrestleMania 38 that will put a smile on your face? This time, Matt, we'll start with you.
I'd love to see a real match, like a bell ring and a referee there and a hand raised at the end. I just think we've seen everything else out of Austin, you know, and that's been like, that's the pro wrestling white whale right there, Mike. Like, will Austin come back and ever work a match again? So that's what I want to see. And perhaps that's selfish. Maybe he's not ready. Maybe he's not comfortable doing that. And that's fine if it doesn't happen, but that's what I want to see.
Boris, what's going to put a smile on your face from old Stone Cold?
Oh, I'm going to have to agree with my colleague, Matt. 100% a match. It's something that I've wanted to see for almost 20 years. We're talking 2 decades. Like, it's crazy. And, you know, if he feels good enough for a match, I would love to see that. But at the end of the day, just keep it short, keep it simple. And, you know, I'm sure that it'll do wonders for Kevin Owens.
All I want to see is Steve Austin and Kevin Owens with a run in from CM Punk. this was the match that we almost thought we had. I interviewed CM Punk and he said the exact words, "Steve knows how to find me." And it was those words that I've been still hanging on for this day. So I don't think we're ever going to get it. I'm sure both men are at peace with that fact now, but Austin coming back, I think for all the naysayers, I think they're going to be surprised. I think he's going to put a smile on their face. Otherwise, he's a guy that wouldn't do it. I'm sure he's been offered dump trucks of money to come to Saudi Arabia. I'm sure he's been offered anything you can think of to come back to wrestling. But I think this is going to be something special no matter what. So either way, we look forward to it. As we always do, we love watching wrestling and we love talking about it here on Sunday Night's Main Event. Boris and Matt, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you for having us. Yeah, thank you for having us. And thank you for the kind words about the show, Mike. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. NXT Talk, the BAM podcast. You can find those and more with these two fine gentlemen. You get it all for pennies. Pennies. Cheaper than gas by far. Until next time. As always, thanks for listening and letting us do what we do. Play safe, drive safe. Happy seeing you.